Grab your Bible and head over to Joshua chapter 21. That's where we're reading this week. We're rapidly getting to the end, and that makes sense because it's
middle of the year.
It's June, man.
Hitting the middle of the year. Time to hit the middle of the reading.
I don't know what happened.
Finish one 2026. Book, start the next.
Yeah, I mean, we are just flying through this year. But chapter 21 does bring us back to some more.
A little bit of listing one more time.
Listing places. And this one is a little different because you have this settling of the Levites.
Yep.
Which are the guys that minister for the priest in the worship of the people. So basically we have a list of all these cities. They're not going to be given a portion of land. They're going to be given cities
scattered
throughout the land.
Right.
And what we have for here largely in 21 is an accounting of that.
Yeah, no, that's right. And, you know, obviously it's most of the chapter. And again, it's kind of like genealogies. The temptation is to, you know,
fly over country.
Fly over it. A couple things worth noticing, though. You know, number one, if you're to plot this out on the map, you'll notice a couple of things. Number one, they're fairly evenly scattered throughout the land. And there does seem to be a pattern where most tribes give four cities. I think there's a couple of variations off the top of my head. But they're relatively evenly scattered through the land, which kind of makes sense because priests and Levites were ultimately the custodians of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want them to be like leaven, so to, you know, a good use of leaven,
right,
you know, spread through the land.
Influencing, teaching the
that's
people.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. Because remember, you know, going back to, because this is the other little bit hint, their cities are handed out by their role, just like they were camped around the tabernacle in the wilderness. In other words, you had the priests on by the door, and then you had, you know, the three Levitical families, Kohath, Gershon, and Merari. And that's how, you know, they're divvied up here by their, you know, Gershonites.
That is, that's how we segment the chapter. Right. Except for the very end, is based on each of those three families.
Priests and then the three families from them. And so, and what's interesting about this, so it does make you skin sense, just like in Numbers where, you know, they were camped by their clans. Mentioning the cities being divvied out among them in this way kind of reminds you they're still serving that role. What was their role in the wilderness? They were to be the guardians of the holiness, right? They were tasked with killing anybody who came too close. The idea was they really were the custodians as the literal priests and then the priestly tribe who otherwise ministered at the temple, the ones who weren't priests themselves, you know, and carried the furniture, this, that, and the other. Now that that role's done, they're still to be the protectors of holiness. They're still supposed to be the keepers and teachers of the law scattered throughout the land. And so, you know, you do see or get a sense of that a little bit. The other bit to just—
Before you leave that, though.
Yeah.
It's another example of how God is trying to insulate the people against the influence of the world, which I think is significant because it just shows how God's people down throughout all time have had the same essential battle.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, we do not want to merge with culture and to embrace culture.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And so this is almost like a defensive line
against
the culture. You have these teachers of the law that are going to be spread throughout the land and pushing back on the cultural influences because we know there are still pockets in the land.
Right.
And so you want to be sure that the people don't begin to embrace the thinking of culture around you. And that just, you know, just reminds you that God's people are always struggling with this.
That's exactly right. And so, yeah, in fact, on that note, let's just leave alone what else we could say about that. Because the thing that I was really going to mention, I guess, was, you know, just like with Simeon, you know, the fulfillment of what Jacob had foretold in Genesis 49, Simeon and Levi will be dispersed through the people.
Mm-hmm.
Simeon dispersed by literally having no borders, just some cities within Judah, and then eventually kind of disappearing, more or less. This one, because the Levites did redeem themselves a bit in the days of Moses with their zeal at the golden calf incident, and God chooses them to be the tribe of the priesthood and whatnot. And so, at the tribal level in time, redeemed themselves a little bit, but they're still, per Jacob's prophecy, scattered. Now it's more of a positive than a negative because, you know, unlike Simeon, the Levites and the priests are going to matter all the way up till the days of Jesus, right? You know, they're going to matter.
And not always do their job.
Well, and sometimes matter for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
You know, the end of the Old Testament, Malachi, you know, should not a priest preserve knowledge?
I was thinking about, you think about Malachi by the time you get to the end and there is this complaint that they are not doing their job.
They're not teaching. They're not holding the line. They're not maintaining the holiness of things. No, that's exactly right.
The other thing to pay special attention to as you're working your way through all of the families and the cities.
Don't cheat.
And then you get to the end, and we need to say some things about
how the chapter ends, you mean?
Yeah. The end of the chapter, verses 43, 44, and 45. Let's just read that. So the Lord gave Israel all the land which he had sworn to their fathers, and they possessed it and lived in it. And the Lord gave them rest on every side, according to all that he had sworn to their fathers. And no one of all their enemies stood before them. The Lord gave all their enemies into their hand. Not one of the good promises which the Lord had made to the house of Israel failed. All came to pass. Now, a couple of interesting things about this statement. The first thing that people may question is, well, now, wait a minute.
I've read a little bit further, and
if we already know that they haven't actually conquered all of the land, and that there are still pockets.
They've not displaced all the Canaanites.
That's a great way to say it.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
And so some people are saying, well, how can you say all the promises were fulfilled if Israel still doesn't technically possess all of the land?
Yeah, and so what we have to do is you have to take that statement and you have to put it in the context of other things that have been said. So I'm thinking, especially since it's just a podcast, we're doing this quickly, Deuteronomy chapter 7 is the place to go back to, where God says this with Moses right before they go in the land, well, Moses' last words for God to the people. This is what God said, verse 22 beginning in Deuteronomy 7. The Lord your God will clear away these nations before you little by little. You may not make an end of them at once, lest the wild beasts grow too numerous for you, but the Lord your God will give them over to you and throw them in the great confusion until they are destroyed, and he will give the kings in your hand, and so on and so forth. But literally, we were told this will be more of a process than a relatively quick event. And so the way you take what God said with Deuteronomy 7 and what's being said here in Joshua is they control the land. That doesn't mean that, you know, it's kind of like when we took a, you know, when the Allies go into Iraq, you know, in the Second Gulf War. We did not knock out all pockets of resistance, but there was a government, the U.S. was it, you know, yeah, there was still Fallujah, yeah, there were still some problems, but the idea was anybody knew who really controlled the region even if there were pockets of resistance to be dealt with. That's the sense. With God, Israel now controls the land. There aren't enough Israelites to completely, literally occupy all the land. But the idea is, and this is where Judges is going to help us, if they stuck with God, they wouldn't be intermarrying. They wouldn't be acculturating. The Levites, okay, just like the Canaanites, there are still pockets of Canaanite cities scattered through they haven't taken yet, though they control the region. There are pockets of Levites scattered throughout the land. In other words, you go kind of quid pro quo. You're kind of both. There's a balance there. You got pockets of priests and Levites, pockets of Canaanites. Who's going to dominate? And what happens is the book of Judges tells us everything goes well till the people begin to, you know, that's why there are still Canaanites around that dominate the people in the days of the Judges. Not because God had failed or they didn't really control the land, but their own sin caused God to allow them to be overrun by what was left in the region, Philistines, Midianites, what have you.
To me, too, it's sort of an odd objection simply because I don't think anybody in any military conflict believes that victory comes only after every foe in every pocket of resistance is eliminated. I know they have found, for example, after World War II, pockets of Japanese soldiers on islands scattered throughout the Pacific who didn't know the war was over.
Right.
And no one said, oh, we got to change the day when World War II ended. It wasn't, 1945. It was actually 1952 when we found that. Nobody says that.
Right.
I think that everybody understands that is a generality, a generality about what has taken place, not this absolute. And it just seems like kind of an odd objection to raise, knowing the nature of military conflict. That's even true still today.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The other thing that's interesting here is, premillennialists will often claim that this is why there has to be a kingdom on the earth.
Literal physical state of Israel again.
Because God never fulfilled the promise to Abraham.
As fulfilled the prophecy qualified. You know, we're talking about the modern political state of Israel, but there must be still a prophetic fulfillment that God owes Israel the land.
This really seems to settle that forever.
Yeah, you know,
right?
Yeah, that's right. We're done.
Yeah, God, every word that he promised,
yeah,
he fulfilled.
Or better way to put it is not what you think God meant. God's saying what I meant when I made this promise has been kept. Yeah. Not what you want to project back into it or assume about it.
Yes.
I have, from my perspective, kept what I promised Abraham.
But it is helpful to go back and to look at those statements and to understand what it was that God was saying and the meaning of those, so there's not question and doubt and uncertainty. So pay attention to that last part as you're working through the reading. But I think this is our last listing chapter.
I believe that's right.
And so if you've endured through some of this kind of tough read with the lists and the cities and all that, we got something different coming in the readings to come. So hang in there with us.